secretly in the background, there's like this rumble occurring, and I'm like, where is that coming from? Do you know that Andrew is one of the only people here that can mimic my dad and truly scare me from the back? Because my dad has a really low voice. So thank you guys, that was beautiful. So it's been raining a lot, right? All right, I'm proud of you guys for making it to church on a rainy day. And the teenager in me, which was long, long gone, but still, when it rains and when it gets cloudy, the teenager in me just wants to watch movies. And so I thought, I'm going to show a short clip, because then somehow I'm satisfied in watching movies. So there's just a short little clip that's going to set up part of my talk. Maybe.
Complain about it. That won't change the world. It'll just make it mad. Some people think you have lots of money. Make it rain everywhere you go. Holla for a dollar.
Some people think you have to be really loud and yell a lot. It's like with a bullhorn shouting.
Hey you, yeah you, do it my way right now. You heard?
Other people choose to just make fun of everything. That's dumb, everyone's dumb. It's easy to make fun of stuff, but it's cooler to make stuff. Some people think changing the world can only be done by the smartest person in the world. Just put them in a room, let them figure it out. The solution of world hunger? Food. Wow, that was like so amazing. Some people see the bad in the world and they just decide to ignore it, but that won't help anything.
Some people think you have to be really famous and super cool.
In fact, lots of people think you have to be really powerful to make a difference, like being mayor or senator or president. But the truth is, a title doesn't make you more important. The world is changed by you. It's one person filled with love, and they just have to live it out, so they do something awesome. Then that person is filled with love, and they do something awesome. It just goes on and on and on and on. And the next thing you know, everything's awesome. Some people think it's impossible to change the world.
It's impossible to change the world.
Well, you can see why they could think that. Living in the world with kids who are hungry, people who are homeless, families weren't happy. I'm just trying to figure it out like everybody else, man. But I do know this, though. Next time you feel overwhelmed or totally alone, remember this. Things don't have to be the way they are. The world is changed by ordinary people. Little people living out big love. And that's what gives the world a...
Awesome. I'm going to stop. He goes into a dance party after that. And though it's cool, not necessarily the point I'm trying to make. But little people living out big love. It seems like a really daunting task. I don't know if you guys have ever been faced with a task like that. Little kids are awesome because they are fearless. Everything seems impossible to adults, but little kids, they're out there taking over the world. Nothing is impossible to them. For them, the inspiration is just living. They don't need anything else. Never has a kid given up on flying because they had no cape. Kids will run around and they'll pretend that they're able to fly through the skies. They'll run through the living room telling epic tales. And there is nothing I love more than when I get to go see my family and I get to hang out with all the children. These are my nieces that I'm obsessed with. And as you can see, on any given day, the world is their playground. Anything is possible. Little Zoe can don on a wig and sing you a song, and Ava can stop the ocean from coming in too quickly. And no matter the situation, they have this dream, this possibility, the awareness that anything can happen. When do we lose that? I think it's easy to sometimes forget that there is more than just myself in the world. I don't know about you, but I get frustrated when I get stuck in traffic until I drive past the really bad car accident. I get grumpy about really long lines at the grocery store thinking I only have three things until I realize that the person, two people in front of me, has four kids under the age of three. And they're trying simply to contain the madness and put food on the belt. I get grumpy when I don't eat. It's actually a problem. But it's because I don't plan. And so things go on and on and on, and somehow I realize that so much of what I think defines me and slows me down are things that maybe aren't as significant to me. Maybe it's not all about me. It's easy to forget the world doesn't always revolve around me. And then there are days that you're reminded and you know that the world does not revolve around you. We're really fortunate to be part of a community and a church here that does do stuff outside of ourselves. We have groups of people that on their own are feeding the homeless in Garden Grove every single Sabbath after church. We have a food pantry that reaches out to something like 500 families, which is insane, an insane amount of food going into our community for families that can't afford it. We have the youth wanting to volunteer at something called the Thomas House to throw parties for kids. We have people that are going out of their way on a regular basis just to show people love. They carry packs in their car that have food and things for them. And this is what alters community. This is what creates change, just as Kid President said. The days you can't change the world are sometimes the days that you can do nothing but change yourself. Sometimes we get so caught up in having to do everything for everyone else that we forget that some of the work has to be done on ourselves. And so those days that maybe we're not feeling like we can go out to save the souls of everyone around us or feed everyone around us, maybe those are the days that we should start taking a little bit of time to work and better ourselves. In Matthew 5, it goes through the Beatitudes and reminds us that we are all salt and light, the thing to give people hope. In Matthew 5:16, it says, "In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to God." This last Sunday, I had an amazing opportunity, and I was told I was allowed to talk about it. My friend, who is in town from the Philippines, her parents actually decided to throw a fundraiser for our nonprofit. Now, I was really excited about it, but I was also terrified because, to be honest, I hate asking for money, and we didn't really know how to do a fundraiser for something that was about us. And so for the first little bit, we were a little bit nervous, and we were talking about how this would even play out, and would people even show up, and would people even care about what it is we're doing. And then we started talking about why we were doing what we were doing. If we can go to the next picture, there are four lovely ladies in this picture. I like to claim it. And there's three others. As you can see, there's Amanda, Elizabeth, Roberta, and myself. And we were all friends from college, and this is actually a really bad picture from the airport. But these are three women that I just absolutely adore, people that have inspired me beyond measure. These are women that a few years back, Elizabeth, the one with the scarf, she was walking through the streets of Manila, and she was on the pedestrian sidewalk above the street, and she was walking, and she literally stepped over a little girl who was laying on the ground. And she stopped as she was stepping over, and she looked down, and she just saw the most horrifying sight. This little girl had her hand out with a cup, and she had open sores all over her, and she was like, "I have to do something." So she leans down and she starts to talk to this little girl, and the little girl just kind of shrugs and goes back into her position. So Elizabeth can't leave it there because Elizabeth is pretty much the kindest human being on the planet. And so she goes on a hunt to find this kid's parents. And she finally tracks them down and she says, "Hey, I want to do something. I'm happy to pay for the medical expenses. I would love to get these sores under control and make sure that your little girl can go back to school and all this stuff." And the parents said, "We're fine. We need her to stay like this. This is how we make our money." Elizabeth could not handle it. I think pretty much the next day she was like, "We have to do something, anything. We have to do something. This cannot be what the world has come to. This cannot be okay. We're on my way to go to class. We're on my way to go to work. I have to walk past these atrocities, these horrible things." And then the conversation began. We began to talk about the needs of the communities there. We started to talk about what we could actually do. And when it came down to it, we actually were talking about going into villages to work in jeepneys, like the jeeps, and we were going to gut them, and we would go into the villages and teach medical care. And Amanda's makes prosthetics, so we were going to have her make prosthetics for those that lost limbs so they could work. And we had this great scheme. And then it came down to that moment, stepping over that little girl in our own backyard, right in the community that they lived in. She was like, "I can't walk past that every day to go save someone else. I have to do something here. I have to help my community. And so some of you know this. This is exactly how Project Propel started. We originally had big plans, and we were going all these different places, and then we realized that it really just needed to be taken care of in the neighborhoods that our friends lived in. And so we're just going to go through. This is kind of like a mission spotlight. I got permission, but I was going to just run through a couple things just so you guys have an idea of what's going on. So if you look right here, you can see that this is what most of the informal settlements in Manila look like. There's 4 million people in these informal settlements, which is crazy because I just found out that every time I walk past this one street, that there's a little door that's like half the size of a normal door that leads into a community of 1,800 people. A little tiny door. It opens up into this whole other world that I've never even been exposed to. And as you continue through, we started realizing that there's all these needs. There's these kids on the streets that need attention. There's these people that are starving to death. And so we started something called urban gardening. Urban gardening is a fascinating thing because I don't have a green thumb. And none of us do. And so we started trying to figure out how we could possibly bring clean water and food or anything of the sort to people in that community. And we started talking to the barangays, and soon we found out, by the way, the barangays are the community leaders, like the Civic Center. We started talking to the barangays, and they said, you know what, you can have the sidewalk that's piled high with rubbish. And we were like, okay. And so we cleaned out the rubbish, and we started teaching people how to garden there, and we built these little gardens, and soon we would have a president and a vice president and a sergeant of arms owning that plot of land, and each person had a little space. And these gardens started feeding 250 people for one garden. And that was a trial run, and we were like, guess that works. These people are magicians. They know how to make things grow because a lot of them came from outside in the farmlands, and they came to the city to make something of themselves. And so here they are, they're gardening and they're building community, and suddenly these women who didn't have a voice, didn't have a title, didn't have a purpose, suddenly are strutting around their community as the leaders of their garden, as the people that know how to bring food to people. In fact, you see right here, this is our livelihood garden. This was supposed to be our store. Our thought was, hey, when people grow too much stuff, we'll just have them sell it and they can make an income, right? Makes sense. Unfortunately for us, but amazingly for them, they would never sell food to anyone in their community that was hungry. They just wouldn't. So our store, our building that was set up for people to be able to make money out of, instead we found that people were gifting their produce because they wanted other people to be able to eat something fresh and clean. And so the things keep going, and so we're learning all about this. I'm learning about worms right now, which is weird. But, you know, we're learning about all these different things, and it's beautiful. And then we started realizing another need, and that was that a lot of people in these informal settlements, if they're pregnant or elderly or have disabilities of any sort, they're kind of locked in place. And even the health workers in the barangays in the city, like center of the city, had no idea how to get to these people or where they even were. And so Elizabeth, who's our president of our nonprofit, she designed something we call the Medicab. It's basically a bicycle welded to a bunch of metal that turns into a stretcher. And it can go through the flood season, so when the water is up to your waist, it doesn't have a motor, you can pedal right on through that, and you can get anyone out of the community that you need to in order to get them health care. It's breathtaking. It's inspiring to see what they're doing out there. Even the vice president of Manila, or Philippines, showed up to celebrate with us, Lenny. And then we keep going, and soon we started realizing, okay, so we've done this stuff for the adults, and the women are starting to have a voice and be able to stand up tall in their neighborhoods, and they're starting to be able to do all this stuff, and we've helped the barangays reach those people that are sick and hurting. Soon we realized that the people we hang out with pretty much the most are the children, right? Everywhere you go, kids are excited to be part of the journey with you. This is the same in every country. Every single country, when a kid sees someone new, they want to know what's going on. And so we decided to do this thing called Fresh Perspectives. We started it kind of as just an adventure to see what happened. And so we thought maybe 50 kids would come. And 250 or more showed up. Amen. And we were like, oh, so this is a need. The kids want a voice. They want something to be able to share. And it's so cool because we're now partnering with another nonprofit that writes children's stories for children by children. And they did the 9/11 situation. They did the earthquake in Haiti. They did all these different things. So now we're the third story. And these kids are able now to tell their story through pictures of flood season through Manila. And suddenly, they're no longer the lost children of a town. They are now going to go around the world and share their story. And it's inspiring, and it's breathtaking, and it's overwhelming to see people transform from when they were voiceless to when suddenly they had a voice, they had purpose, they had a reason for being alive, they had something to share with someone. They were no longer that person that just was in the corner waiting to die. It's an amazing thing to be able to be part of a community that cares so deeply about other people. And I know I get taken aback every single time I read stories or see stories or hear stories about even your lives here. And I experience this unknowing ability of how to encourage that and to say, you have a voice, you have something to say. Say it loud. And when I was thinking about all this, and as we went through our fundraiser, and as Roberta and I were talking back and forth, and we were so excited, and we were answering all the questions, and we're like, yeah, Medicabs, and then we have a new initiative coming up, and we were excitedly telling it, there's inevitably that one question that stops you in your tracks and kind of stabs you right in your core. And that question hit me pretty hard. When are you building a church? And I stopped. Because suddenly I realized I'm a pastor. I should have probably thought of this at some point. But I hadn't. And it's not that I was angered by the question, but I was more hurt by the question because we weren't talking about a church. We were talking about food and water and purpose and a voice. And building a community that has been exiled, they don't even have normal-sized doors getting into their community. And I was taken aback and I was kind of shut down for a moment because I didn't know what to say because I felt like maybe I had failed somehow, that maybe I wasn't doing exactly what I was supposed to be doing in this project. And maybe as a pastor, that was supposed to be my goal, build them a church. But it wasn't. Honestly, it still isn't. Why? Because they have churches and buildings everywhere. But they don't have as clean water and fresh food. And so I had to face this question, and I actually went to the back room and like kind of stood there for a second because it threw off the entire rhythm of what I was doing because I felt really questioned in a certain way. And I was like, you know what? So many people have that passion and they have that ability to build this community and this church, and I want them to do that, but maybe that's not where I fit into this picture. Sometimes as humans, we fail to see the good in what is happening. Or maybe it is that we expect more from people. I don't know. But when I heard that person's question, I knew I needed more time to process it. And so I've taken that opportunity via a sermon. Church is an important place, and I hope you don't hear me wrong. I think church is a critical part of our community, bringing everyone together to worship and celebrate and focus our hearts. But I am so excited to be able to say that there is also more to that outside of these doors. That church is not necessarily about a physical structure. Church is not about us being able to drive and park into an amazing parking lot and eat food together. Though that's great and incredibly important for our own emotional psyche, there is more to the gospel message than that. What if our churches didn't have doors? What if anyone could come in and out and there is no questions about why they were there? What if we had worship out there? What would that mean? What would that look like? People have views and opinions and concepts of what we should be doing and what maybe should be done in our lives. We all have opinions, maybe even about what church should look like, and we want to challenge people and move them in that direction. Many of us have defined the world for others, and sometimes we forget to redefine it for ourselves. Now, again, I hope that you hear what I'm going to say. Not in a controversial or crazy manner, but in one that truly shows the heart of Jesus. In the start of the Gospels, there's a parallel story, and that's of Elizabeth and Mary. Elizabeth is about to give birth to a son who is destined to prepare the way for the Messiah, and Mary is about to give birth to a son who is supposed to be the Messiah. Elizabeth then has John the Baptist, and soon after, Mary has Jesus. John the Baptist does his role beautifully. He paves the way, proclaiming that he is not the greatest, but there is another one to come. He proclaims that even greater than himself, he who is the Messiah will come and he will save the world. He wanders the wilderness and converts the multitudes, and then the day comes where he's standing there in the midst of a crowd and he meets eyes with Jesus. And John knows that this is the man of the hour. He proclaims his identity, and he goes through the process of taking the message all the way home. And then he says, time for baptism. Jesus gets in the water and allows a simple man, John the Baptist, baptize him. And this is a pivotal moment because something big happens here. There's an unexplainable moment of God's presence. And then they part ways, and John the Baptist, soon thereafter, gets arrested by King Herod and thrown into prison. And then Jesus begins his documented ministry. Jesus begins gathering his disciples. He roams the hillsides and begins doing miraculous things, unexplainable things, things that draw crowds to him, filling everyone with hope and inspiration. Jesus speaks with passion and gives life with his words. He heals a leper, a paralytic, eats with sinners, breaks the Sabbath by picking wheat. He breaks the Sabbath by healing a man. He teaches love for enemies, challenges people not to criticize each other, and blows people's minds with the healing of a widow's dead son. Jesus is taking everything from Jerusalem to Galilee by storm, revolutionizing thoughts, changing people's minds and understandings of who God is, and creating a movement that is unexplainable. Meanwhile, John the Baptist is in prison, and he's hearing the stories play out. He hears what Jesus is doing, and his head is reeling. What is his head reeling about? It's found in Matthew 11 and Luke 7. This moment is like a slight gut punch to the gospel message. I'm going to read it from Luke 7 because I think it says it clearest. Luke 7, 18. John's disciples told him about all of these things. Calling two of them, he sent them to the Lord to ask, are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else? When the men came to Jesus, they said, John the Baptist sent us to ask you a question. Are you the one to come, or should we expect someone else? At that very time, Jesus cured many who had diseases, sicknesses, and evil spirits, and gave sight to many who were blind. So he replied to the messengers, go back and report to John what you have seen and heard. The blind receive sight, the lame walk. Those who have leprosy are cured, and the deaf hear. The dead are raised, and the good news is preached to the poor. Blessed is the man who does not fall away on account of me. This question, are you the one who was to come, or should we expect someone else? That's a crazy question coming from John the Baptist, don't you think? Not only does it ease all of my guilt for having any doubt ever in my entire life, but it also points to the realness and the humanness, the humanity of John the Baptist. Now remember, this question comes with the tensions of John the Baptist being a confident witness to Jesus. It's said that in John 1:29-36, 3:26-30, Matthew 3:14-15. It says over and over and over that John is a confident witness to Jesus. He's the one proclaiming the way for Jesus to come. He's proclaiming the Messiah. Yet he's the one now sitting in prison saying, are you the one, or should I expect someone else? This isn't just a moment of doubt. In some of the commentaries, they have some different ways of understanding this. The first one is a failure of nerve in which John in prison is troubled by uncertainty. A lot of people think it's simply uncertainty or doubt. Number two, as a surprise that whereas he had expected a fiery reformer and a prophet of judgment, Jesus has come bringing grace and healing. Maybe his groove is thrown off because he's not the Messiah that John had thought he would be. Number three, as eager hopefulness that Jesus is indeed the one whose coming he had announced. He's actually hoping for affirmation so he can go in peace. Number four, as an effort to either encourage Jesus to make a public announcement of his identity or as a witness to his own disciples. Maybe he just wants proof for Jesus to say it himself. Two and three are most commonly thought of. The tension between the characterization of the coming one as a fiery reformer in John's preaching and Jesus' response to John lends weight to the view that Jesus' ministry took a different course than John actually expected. What happens when the Messiah doesn't look like you wanted him to look? What happens when the Messiah doesn't look the way he was supposed to? What happens when you don't get what you think you're getting, or maybe even what you deserve? What happens when your portrait of Jesus shifts and your experience of Jesus and God changes from your childhood images to adolescent expectations and adult disappointments? What happens when your picture of God is different? We often think we know who Jesus is. We think we figured out who God is, what he's doing, and what he stands for. And then we are forced by experience to revise our understandings, and we ask, are you the one, or should we look for another? I love this story. I love it because it pushes me to realize the barriers that Jesus was busy breaking down. The man who proclaimed the way for the Messiah has a moment where he realizes that the mess in the Messiah is not what he was expecting. He had full hope that Jesus would regain complete control, create the kingdom, and take it back from the Gentiles and the oppressors. John expected Jesus to bring judgment and condemnation on the evil in the world and immediately usher in the kingdom of glory. He found it hard to see how Jesus' teaching, healing, and gracious, miraculous signs were getting that accomplished. Instead of kingdom glory, Jesus showed up with kingdom grace. Jesus showed up in all of the wrong places, in houses of sinners, touching the outcast and unclean, healing people no matter what day of the week it was. He didn't look like church. He didn't look like he was supposed to look like. Jesus challenges us to live beyond a building. Jesus spent most of his ministry outside of the synagogues, loving on people, demonstrating love for every human being coming in his path. He took interest in those who were thought of as uninteresting. And if you want to get old school, we can quote Ellen White right now. Ellen White talks about the need for our churches and our communities to have disinterested benevolence, to be so excited about the human being in front of us that we don't expect to get anything in return. We're doing it because we love them, because we have an amazing role model named Jesus who has set before us this path that opens up all the questions and all the doors and says nothing is too dirty or too gross or too disturbing for me to handle it. That's what our community is called to do. That is what we are challenged to be as a church. Not a church, but a church. We don't need to be trapped only one day a week in a misery that just makes us hang out with each other, but rather let's go out and we go into our communities and breathe life into the people around us. And so when we do come back into our church, we breathe life into each other with the passion and energy of what's going on outside. And we say, what are you doing? This is so great. I would love to have you be part of this. Or my life was turned around because I experienced something out here. It's no longer the dirtiness of the outside, but rather us joining in and purifying, creating hope and wholeness and cleanliness and love everywhere we go. I love this story because even John the Baptist was taken aback by who Jesus really was. Christianity, and really anyone, has an amazing opportunity here. We have an opportunity to take interest in everyone, to support and build each other up. We can heal the sick. Maybe not in the most medical of senses, but we can heal the brokenhearted. We can listen to people's stories. And hugs are free, guys. We can go out there and show a little bit of love and companionship to people. And all of this does not have to be about a transaction. This doesn't have to be about me getting money to do this. This is about a relationship. This is about a community changing every person we come in contact with. It's about the ripple effect of how it affects people outside of our walls when they see someone living passionately and holy. It's interesting. Some people may say that love is a sign of weakness or that too much kindness can make a business crumble. I beg to differ. Justice and love are never wrong. Being kind and treating people well is never wrong. It's never a waste of time. It's business building and a sign of strength because it builds strength in our communities. In Jesus' prayer of Matthew 6:10, it says, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." This is in the present tense. Kingdom values happen now before anything else can happen. We must take to fostering heaven right now on earth. We as Christians are called to lift up the weak. We are called to speak for those that are voiceless. We are called to have compassion when no one else seems to have any. And to close, in Proverbs 31:8-9, it says, "Speak up for people who cannot speak for themselves. Protect the rights of all who are helpless. Speak for them and be a righteous judge. Protect the rights of the poor and needy." This is a challenge to us to live differently. When we see people on the sidewalk and we're stepping over them, pause. Find out their story and see what it is that you can do to better their life. Don't think that you're the savior by any means. But look to your community and look to the person that you're guiding your life off of and say, what would they do? How would they handle this? How can I influence my community? And let's blow people's minds. Let's take our community by storm. Love so deeply that people can't help but point to Jesus. And maybe a few people will say, are you guys the one? And we'll be able to say, we have a good example. And we'll be able to answer that question and send back, we're healing the sick. We're treating those that are blind. We're loving those that have no voice. We're standing up for those that are broken. And we are here as a community of love.